1, 2, 3, 4, Medium Talk.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Medium Talk on the Black Guy Who Tips Premium Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rod. As always, I try to find interesting people to have interesting conversations with, and sometimes they find me. Today, I'm actually going to talk with a man named Sterling Ashby of History and Action Toys. What's going on, Sterling? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Rod. How are you?
Pretty good. Glad to talk to you. You know, I got your email, and you know, sometimes we get a lot of emails about a lot of different things, but every once in a while there's one that genuinely piques my interest. And you know, I went and clicked on the link and said, hey, this guy seems interesting. I think I'm going to check him out. You can go to hiatoys.com to see exactly what we're going to talk about. But, Sterling, can you kind of, explain to the audience what History in Action Toys is?
Yeah. History in Action Toys is a line of history inspired action figures. And so, we have a figure that's modeled, that's inspired by Bessie Coleman. We have a figure that's inspired by Matthew Henson, and we have a figure that's inspired by Benjamin Banneker. So together, that's our initial line of History in Action Toys.
And when did you start this?
You know, the idea might have came to me almost, you know, eight years ago or so, but we probably launched 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay. And what was the impetus? Like, what was the thing that made you go, this is, you know, we need to get some black historical action figures out here for the kids.
Yeah. And I'm sorry. You know, I have a nerd angle on it. You know, this mm-hmm. is my take on it, but, I bought a friend's kid, a poorly designed Einstein figurine kind of thing, mm-hmm. along with a book. You know, sometimes I get kids stuff that they might not always be looking for, but something that maybe hopefully they'll think about something. And when he opened it up, he was like, "Dad, who's this?" Right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I was like, wait a second. I just kind of tricked him into starting a conversation about something of substance. Mm-hmm. I wonder if I can do this again. I wonder if I could design a line of African American inspired action figures that are really well done, really well made toys, but also are a tribute to some folks from our past. So, and then I'm sparking them to ask questions to begin learning and exploring. You know, one kid might be focused in on, you know, the sea exploration of Henson or his early childhood of both his parents dying by the time he was 8. But someone else, they might, you know, try to understand the aeronautical approach of the training that Bessie Coleman gained when she went to France to learn how to fly because no one would teach her here in the United States. Or Banneker, how he could, what were the laws like at the time that allowed him to be free when so many other African Americans were enslaved in the early 1700s. So it's child-centered learning. I'm not an educator. I just kind of begun learning some of the terms that they use, but the kids are like leading their own learning once they get kind of exposed to the toys.
So did you like, because each toy comes with a teaching guide.
Yeah.
Did you like, create those on your own? Did you like, consult with anybody or, you know, like how did you, you know, come up with that?
Yeah. For the teaching guide in particular, I worked with a classroom teacher. I was trying to find a way that I could say to teachers, hey, you know, not only here's a toy, but here's how it can be helpful to you. And here's some activities around it. So there was a teacher in the suburbs of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. She allowed me to come in and present her whole class. And together we developed the one teaching guide and then, you know, build out the other two. So teachers, I've just had a host of parents, teachers, educators that have kind of, you know, try to nudge me along or help me along. You know, just cause I had a strong interest in this doesn't mean the whole world bought into black action figures, but we're still, you know, trying to hold our own here and get to parents, teachers and educators that, think we can make a difference.
Now, how did you decide on these three people, Bessie Coleman, Benjamin Banneker, and Matthew Alexander Henson?
I was tossing around a bunch of names with friends and trying to stay away from, you know, one, the King family, you know, there's a lot of lawsuits around the use of the names. So certain individuals, people are very highly protective of the names and from folks from history. But also I wanted to find some people who actually had kind of some action in them. Nothing against the civil rights heroes, but, these three individuals, their action defined, their significance. They also weren't as well known as they weren't the first names that would come to mind. So I want to try to expand the horizon of kids, like, you know, that, oh, well, who is this? I hadn't heard of this person. I mean, but in my mind, if I had a chance, I would do 10, you know, and some of the next ones I'd do like George Washington Carver. I know people talk about him a lot, but the more you explore of his life, you know, there's so much he was trying to pull from that peanut and from his science that, it was pretty spectacular. And then the other one, Harriet Tubman. I mean, she's actually, if you explore her life, she's like a superhero.
Oh yeah. One of my favorite. I actually would love to see that action figure with like a pump action shotgun.
Yeah. Excuse me. I have a little cold here, but yeah. Yeah. I mean, she is serious.
Yeah. She was no joke, man. I still don't know why. Well, maybe Hollywood is not ready to make that
movie. They're not ready. I mean, to me, between Harriet Tubman and then the story of John Brown, and I would include John Brown in my set of African-American action figures. Are you familiar with the story of John Brown from Harper's Ferry?
Yeah. The abolitionist.
Yeah. I mean, well, one, when I read the most recent biography on his life, they suggested Harriet Tubman was there at Harper's Ferry as one of his spies.
Mm.
Frederick Douglass did not show up to help him. But it's also interesting. These are two other guys now that people don't know a whole lot about. But the number of African-Americans joined John Brown's raiders at Harper's Ferry. And they were free African-Americans who had been educated at Oberlin College there in Ohio. And they could have done whatever they wanted, but they chose to maybe stand up to try to make a difference and stand for what they thought was right and take a huge risk. The one guy's name is Dangerfield Newby. If you click on him on your computer, Dangerfield Newby, I mean, he's got like a black vest and a hat to the side. He's a real cowboy from the era. And he showed up with John Brown. He'd be a great action figure. So John Brown and his raiders would be good action figures. Also, maybe the Buffalo Soldiers. And I'm sure we could think of more.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, Hollywood is now kind of delving into some black history. Although Red Tails, you know, I think you can debate the quality of the movie. I think the effort was there, you know, what they were trying to do. And I think a lot of people, you know, especially kids.
Yeah.
Cause I think a lot of this stuff is for kids, and I think it helps build stronger, belief in yourself, when you see someone who looks like you achieving something, whether it be on screen or in real life. So, I think Hollywood is now seeing that there's money to be made in black stories. It would be cool if they, take a look at some of this stuff. We might be a ways off from our, John Brown and the Raiders, we might be a little bit off from, the Harriet Tubman, story, hopefully starring the lady who, plays Michonne on, Walking Dead. But, you know, we might be a ways off, but, we can definitely get started down that path. Another thing too, like, what goes into making an action figure? Because, you know, most people's experiences, you playing with an action figure, but, you know, I think very few people actually think about the production side of it. How long is that, you know, process, and is it costly?
Oh, it's cost. I mean, it's just like manufacturing some widget, not an iPad. It's not electronic, but, you know, it's like a whole factory process. So starting out, I had to find an artist, and I used this great African-American artist in LA named Robert Roach. And if you can look him up, he might be a future guest of yours.
Okay.
But Mr. Roach has a comic book line. He's done some work for the studios. And, you know, we use the internet to find each other. And it wasn't a quick process. You know, first you're like talking this idea out, and you get with a family member or somebody you trust, and you get some ideas down on paper, and you're trying to get the concept down. And then after you get the concept down, all right, well, who could draw these things to help me, you know, give some real shape to them? That's where Mr. Roach came into play. Then I found a great sculptor, and the sculptor was in Oregon. I haven't kept up with the gentleman, but when he delivered his work, it was a piece of art. Mm. I mean, it was, you know, but the process doesn't stop there, right? You just have three basically figurines, and they're not mobile. They don't bend at the joints and all that. But he's begun to help you get them in shape. At the same time, you're working with a branding person, right? Because you need great packaging and a little bit of a website, web presence to go along with it. So there's a award-winning guy here in D.C. who worked with me. He'd done a lot of work with the Smithsonian and some other museums. So he got my box looking great. And then I had to go over abroad to actually manufacture. Wow. At the time, when I was looking around, some would say no action figures were being produced in the United States. Now, I don't know as of right today if that's changed, but action figures are not being made here. So Mattel and Hasbro, a number of those toy folks. I don't want to say the wrong people's name and say something wrong, but
right.
A number of them are not producing them here, manufacturing them here in the States. So had to work with some folks to find someone to source it with a company that could do it. Found that. They were in Asia. They were fantastic. They made my product better than what I had sent to them. And they were able to help me in a efficient, cost-effective manner. But each rung you go along, artist, sculptor, prototype, factory, each wave is getting a little costlier and a little costlier. I spent over $100,000 on this effort.
Wow.
So it wasn't a little thing, but it was an attempt to try to play big and to get into the game. I practice law as my day-to-day profession. So I'd been able to save up some chips, and I got some friends and family investors who believed in me and went along for the ride.
Wow, man, that's amazing. You know, especially that so many people could, you know, rally around that cause, man, because that's a lot of dough, man, to invest into this thing. And it's also, it probably helps that you pick the cause that, you know, people can root for.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like, oh, I'm gonna make Mr. T and George Jefferson action figures. It was like, no, this is something that, you know, not that those are bad, but you know, this is like something that everybody universally can be like, no one will not benefit from knowing more about these people, you know?
Right.
Did you have anybody that was like, you can't do it or don't do it or, you know, why are you doing this?
No one comes that strong, but, entrepreneurship, as you know, probably with your show, you know, it teaches you so much. I mean, you know, you will run up against some obstacles. Who comes out to support? Who doesn't? You know, but you can't predict all that. You're surprised by so many, and then you are disappointed by some, and ideally it all bounces out. No one came out as a detractor. Like, why would you do that? But you know, at the same time, when I speak to folks as a lawyer and work with entrepreneurs, I do challenge people to find some more of that critical voice earlier, because you can get a better maybe business model in place if you invite some of those critics into the room. Some of those people beyond your circle of people, right? You got to find ways to connect with folks sooner and quicker who are outside of your circle that might give you, you know, an angle or something there, something a little different.
Yeah, everybody has some type of knowledge, even if it's something they failed at. Right. You can learn from them because they know what it takes to fail even.
Right. But we probably need a little less of your mom and your aunt and, you know,
right.
Your cousin telling you, oh my goodness, this is excellent. But who knows? I mean, you know, I don't know where this all ends up. I did initial run of around 10,000 units. I've sold around 6,000.
Okay.
You know, but ideally for a real business, you need to sell, you know, 60,000.
Right.
Know? So we're still learning and trying to grow and see if we can, continue to gain interest. And that's why we're glad to be able to talk to you today.
Did you ever like consider just selling out? Like, you know, why don't I just make an Apollo Creed action figure? You know, that one, you know, it'll sell enough. to subsidize the other right. stuff that I do. You know, maybe get me a Soulja Boy action figure or something that I could just, you know, get some money right away.
You know, I can say this now because he's not in office, but like even when the last mayor was in, I'm in Washington, D.C., the last mayor, mm-hmm. someone from his camp was like, seriously, well, can't you make one of the, you know, of the mayor? You know? I was like, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm probably getting in trouble over this, but he's not the mayor anymore.
So, right.
And I was like, no, you know, you know,
what would his accessories be?
You know, then I told him the price. They're like, oh, okay. You know, because, somewhere in there, I mentioned when I was telling going through the process, the molds, like once you have the prototype, you have to have a mold made. Each mold is like for each of them is so that all the parts can be made for each of those toys. It's like $7,000-$8,000.
Wow.
Before you start mass producing them. But then from there on, this mold can make like 100,000, you know, units. Mm. So it's around, but the startup costs are high. But somewhere people weren't getting that there. Yeah. I don't know what the, I don't want to crack on that particular mayor. Right. I'm not holding you, but, right. you know.
Yeah.
But it was, you're kind of have an out of body moment with, you know, like, I don't really see him with as the next Bessie Coleman, you know, or you know,
right.
like that.
It's like, but, you know, maybe he will be on the list eventually, but he's kind of further down than what you're currently looking at as right. far as qualifications. And that's no, you know, that's no slight. It's just, there's a dearth. I mean, there's really just a lack of historical black action figures, period. So, you know, it's no offense to anybody that, you know, you might be a ways down.
Right. So, but no, I did not imagine. I had probably a number of kind of requests or inquiries, you know, and, maybe just because of where my angle was and where I was gearing it towards, you know, I didn't get thrown off track. Maybe I should have learned how to be a more of a hustler on the whole thing, you know,
yeah.
And caught the latest phenom that was coming along. Soulja Boy or whatever.
Right. You just, go find like Lil B or something. Also you get, who's your target demographic when it came to like making these toys? Like, was it kids? Was it teachers? Was it, you know, people that are into black history? You know, what exactly, like, who are you thinking? Like, here's the people who are going to buy these figures.
Yeah. I'm thinking, it's actually right. It's while it's for the kids, it's the moms.
Mm.
So moms of African American boys between the ages of 6 and 11, and you know, who have some interest in understanding that history provides some context for their child's achievement. History provides a benchmark for what might inspire them to do more, go further. So. A little bit of consciousness, a little bit of education, some moms, then some teachers, and then finally some African American museums. So some museum stores have also been big supporters of the effort.
Cause I feel like as a kid, if I had access to these action figures, on the one hand, obviously, you know, I would end up learning some stuff just by osmosis. But right. then eventually, you know, I'm just going to have them fighting Optimus Prime, you know.
That's like, right. That's right.
You know, so I would love to see, you know, Benjamin Banneker, like telling Duke from G.I. Joe what to do. I feel like that would also be, cause you know, I think kids are very kind of simple in that way and it also does add something to it. Cause it's like, look, a character that looks like me, he's telling G.I. Joe what to do.
Right. Now, I mean, the weird part about it is that kids, they reconcile this difference pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some, like I've seen some kids like, oh, I need to put this on my shelf. Like a more of a school bookish child who's like, I got to put this on my shelf. Some kids are like, oh, they want to do the activities, but you know, it's part of their action figure mix.
Mm-hmm.
I had this great little kid here in town. He drew a picture of all three, like with crayons, like in one scene, like, you know, like Henson was climbing up a mountain on the one side and Bessie's plane was going over top and Banneker was charting a course. I mean, he just sat in his room and drew a picture, you know, like a 7-year-old.
Wow. Moments like that, are you like, man, this is all worth it? I'm doing something right.
I mean, again, I'm going to go back. I spent six figures, but it's worth it. It's weird, but it's, you know, I don't want to get overly sentimental with it because it is a business.
Right.
But there are moments like that where I've seen kids' reaction or mom's reactions or educators' reactions that really think you've done something well. But
so, go ahead. I'm sorry. I mean,
but you know, like a lot of small businesses, mastering the marketing and getting the word out, it's a challenge. And it's still something to try to get right. But the idea of being in this space and doing something good and pulling kids into some good conversations as well as maybe something just fun and child appropriate. I mean, you talked before about, African-American movies being made or African-American stories be turned into movies, you know? Kids don't, parents don't need to have their kids in 12 Years a Slave, right?
Right.
You don't need to have your 7-year-old in 12 Years a Slave for their Black History moment. And, you know, this is something to help you there. Red Tails is too. Red Tails is appropriate for younger kids.
Right.
But something like this is also add to that mix of the things you share with children.
Yeah.
I was in 12 Years a Slave and some people had young kids in it. And I was like, oh my goodness.
Oh man. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing about Black history. Like, especially in America, like so much of it is being condensed to just the negative things or the harsher realities of it, which right. I'm not, you know, obviously there's a place for and people definitely, you know, you need to know those things. But I've always been of two minds where it's like, as a kid, I just wouldn't want that to be the introduction to my heritage is look at all this, you know, this harsh reality of things that happen. Like we have to mix that up and put in some, hey, here's some people you can look up to. Here's some people that accomplish things, that look like you, that you can relate to. Maybe they look like your aunt, your sister, your cousin, your, you know, whoever, but you can go, oh yes, I can do those things as well. You know, it's one of the reasons I think so many people had emotional outpouring when Barack Obama was elected to office because they knew it was going to mean something for children to grow up going, hey, a Black person can be president. So yeah, it is odd to me to be like, all right, kids, let's learn about Black history. 12 Years a Slave.
Great. Yeah, no, I mean, we got to work with our museums. We got to work in a number of ways to find that right way to introduce it. I mean, I think back when I was in elementary school, I'm a few years older than you, but I came along, the mid to late 70s there as like second, third grade when Roots came out.
Oh man.
And I was going to integrated school in a kind of rough neighborhood right outside of Philadelphia. And, it wasn't all that comfortable. You know, I mean, you know, all of a sudden, you know, everybody, you know, Chicken George, all these nicknames being thrown at you, you know, Kunta, you know, no, my name's not Kunta, you know, and, I remember the junior high kids, you know, they use as an excuse to pick on the junior high kids would pick on like elementary school kids. It was a weird little warped little, you know, time, you know, not the, you know, now if you look at somebody funny, it's bullying, but
right.
I think we had real bullying back then. And, it was more than just, you know, a funny look. Being introduced to Black history in age appropriate manner so that it serves as a source of strength. I think these characters can do that. It's not just my toys help do that, but they're part of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, the other thing is, when it comes to, kids, like, you never know what that, cause, you know, you're dealing with a child. You never know what it is that's going to inspire them to do something. And I know for me in my life, it's always been little things, you know, it's the things that we take for granted. That is like, I don't know, Alpine, the G.I. Joe, you know, like it's a very small thing, but it's like, look, here's a Black G.I. Joe. And then when it comes to Black History Month, for me in school, the number one memory that I will always have is watching Eyes on the Prize.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, so I don't like, there's so many positive things I could tie it to, but I'm mostly going to tie it to awkward interactions with white people during watching Eyes of the Prize. and all of us being like, oh man, this is not cool. I'm going to be angry a little bit. Don't talk to me,
right,
you know?
Right, right. Did you grow up in the Charlotte area?
Yeah, I grew up in Charlotte. Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, you guys had to, yeah, there's history there.
Right.
Sitting across the table from each other like, oh, hey.
Yeah. One of the most famous sit-ins happened like an hour and a half from here. You know, there's I've talked to, you know, I was in this, program called Inroads. And, they would sometimes bring in people to speak, or we'd have, banquets and stuff. And we'd sit down with people who lived Black history, and they'd be like, you know, I was here at this high school when it was integrated. You're like, oh my God. And they, you know, and they tell you the stories, and, you know, it's, and it just gets real. So, I think just adding some inspiration or uplifting kind of like people to the mix is, imperative, man. And I think, you know, adding the toys is real cool. If you could add one person who is currently alive, who do you think that would be?
Oh, that's an original one thrown at me there. Someone that is alive. Who inspires me?
And don't worry about copyright, anything,
right,
you know.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
A made up world where no one's going to sue anybody.
Right, right. Who right now is creating history that's pretty doggone special? Let's see. I mean, let's see. There's a minister from New York City called Calvin Butts, who every time I hear him, the man is just really just has morally courageous and inspiring and moving. That also that gentleman who runs Harlem Children's Zone there.
Oh, yeah. Jeffrey Canada?
Jeffrey Canada. I mean, when you hear that story, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he could have kind of gone other routes, you know, but he turned that energy to really try to create something different, bigger, and bolder for a place where kids really needed it. Mm-hmm. And an innovative model. Who else inspires it just a little different? I mean, a lot of times people nowadays they're just regular folks that move you. But those are two people that have moved me and still do. So, but action heroes. I mean, you know, athletes surprise you all the time. Teams surprise you. I just stayed away from athletes and entertainers. I just said, you know what? There's a lot of people that will cover that space. So I'll leave that to someone else. But people that are building and doing, I'm thinking.
And those people kind of get lionized while they're still alive. You know, like some historical figures, you know, like they, you know, you can live and die in obscurity, or, you know, die impoverished and nobody's celebrating you. And then you go back and go, hey man, did you know there was a brother that actually climbed that mountain already?
Right. I mean, maybe you've seen it, but when I saw the Mandela movie out, right, that movie and the whole period of around his death was really moving. I mean, you're like, this dude really did it. I mean, and he doesn't claim to be a saint. He's not claiming to be a saint, you know. All right, Winnie, I messed up. But the first wave, I messed up, you know. You know, I was a lawyer, but I led an armed revolution. But change came about. He changed his life and did different things. Here in D.C., there's a new channel on our cable called the Africa Channel. It's like here is like channel 188. But it's a group of broadcasters out of like Chicago. And it's really put on some impressive programming because they were showing all of that burial related matters without any interruption. And like, so you didn't have to see Katie Couric or whoever the woman is on today's show now. You know, jump in and give you their take. You could just watch it straight. And they were showing a documentary that had been done, like almost Eyes on the Prize from South Africa on his life, that like an in-depth, like 10-hour one. I caught like 6 hours of it. So, I mean, there are some stories here. There are some people who are living and moving. I'm really impressed by people right now, the mixing of African-American, Africa, and people who are like moving between the spaces. To London, to here, to Africa, moving and beginning trying to create things. As a businessman, as a lawyer here in D.C., I'm working with some folks who are moving between these spaces. And we don't know where it's going to turn out, but I think they're the ones on the verge of you know, who are really creating something special. Because the technology allows us to bridge these gaps. You know, your show probably could have the same a marketplace in Nairobi or in Cape Town. Mm. You know, there is a market there. It's, you know, with the world, so because of technology, is so much bigger than where we are.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. We get listeners from all over the globe. And yeah, we have listeners in Africa and all that.
Oh, wow. I remember when I went to I got to do a trip to Nairobi. And that's one of the first times I realized how special we are as African Americans, how the world just loves our style, our way of being, our culture. I mean, you're like in Nairobi, I've been to Hong Kong, and it's our music all over the radio. You're like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, we export culture. Like, that's one of our things here, and we definitely shape it and mold it. I think it's one of the reasons people got so mad that Macklemore won the Grammy is because they felt like we weren't listening to, because black people weren't behind his push necessarily. But I mean, in general, I feel like, you know, what we kind of inform and shape history just by being in so many ways.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm going to throw this one at you and maybe draw me back into it. But where is Black History Month now? I mean, where do you see it?
Well, I don't have,
when we were a kid.
Well, I don't have any children, right? So for one, I don't really have access, or insight into like what's going on in the school system necessarily. So, I want to preface it with that. And as an adult, I actually see, a lot of people that are preoccupied with Black History Month, even if it's ironic, you know, but I'll see people posting stuff about Black history. Like, everyone's kind of aware of it. Which, you know, is always kind of amazing to me, that even as people claim to not be affected by it or that it no longer matters, they're still teaching it. They're still passing it down. They're still informing people stuff. Since I'm not in school, I feel like, for me personally, I've never really understood why, it was reduced to just a month at some point, because black people, to me, more than any other people's story in America, are the story of America. We embody everything from the bottom to the top. Literally the foundation is built upon our backs. The stories of, economic mobility, for us start from the lowest spot. Like, just so to me, I've never understood why we couldn't intertwine it with just American history and teach our stories throughout every month, throughout every course, throughout everything to do with America, and history itself. Because I just didn't understand the need for the separation. Once I got past a certain age, I think when I was younger, though, the reason we had to have this month, and like I said, I'm not in school, so I don't know anymore, but they wouldn't teach it.
Yeah.
You know, which was unfortunately, but, you know, 11 months of the year, they have no interest in teaching you about anybody, that's not a white person pretty much in general, but, specifically not black people in general. So, you know, I don't know what's going on in school now. Maybe you have more insight than I do, but if, you know, if they're also still not teaching black history or about black people throughout the rest of the year, then yeah, we got to keep Black History Month. If they are, then hey, then I'm fine. We can let it go.
Yeah. I don't know the full status of where things are. I mean, I do know that the black homeschooling effort is growing, because there is a group of people that still believe that, you know, we're not fully being addressed, or the expectations aren't being placed upon our kids in a certain way in school. And so I didn't know that there's a rising tide of black homeschoolers, you know, or parents are still doing a lot of creative things to supplement their children in schools. I mean, all parents don't have the capabilities, but because of this project, I've come into interaction with a number of these groups in Mocha Moms, the Jack and Jill, in DC, there's this one group of black mom homeschoolers, Little Geniuses. They're a collective that comes together just to teach the African American boys about math and science. And it's really, really special. I mean, they put in a lot of extra time, but because they feel they wouldn't get that if they were just in regular school.
Well, that's one of the things, that just I've learned over my life. It's really not about the schools. It's really not about Black History Month. It's about parents, you know.
Okay.
If your parents are interested and active, And if they care about these kind of things, you will learn it. You know, my parents were interested in me knowing my history. So,
you know,
you go to my house and on the shelf, there's Before the Mayflower and autobiography of Malcolm X. And, like they just weren't going to let me, you know, go. I mean, I even remember, we had a book called What Color Was Jesus? You know, like they were not going to let me go through life without at least thinking about race to some extent, and you know, in my place in the American diaspora, so I needed that.
I think that's same with me. I don't know, you know, all parents don't have the time necessarily to share directly, but definitely the books that were on the shelf of my family members were my education. I mean, you know, I'd end up at my godmother's basement. She had all these books down there. Next thing I know, I'm digging out these, you know, this stuff from the 60s. And you're like, whoa, you know, and I'd ask a question or two and they were like, where'd you get that? You know,
did you grow up like nerdy, you know, reading a lot? Did you play with action figures? I did. So
I wasn't a big action figure person. I had them.
Mm-hmm.
I collected comic books. That was my big thing.
Oh, me too, bro.
And so, I was big in, you know, I had some baseball cards and comic books. But I call myself having a collection of comic books, you know, showing up for some number ones, you know, to the store. Had my comic book store that was like on Chestnut, like, I don't know, 22nd and Chestnut in Philadelphia. Like the things we did as a kid, like me and my sister would get on public transportation, go down, like take two connections, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I look back, I was in third grade, she was in first grade. I hear that's like illegal now. Like kids can't even do anything like that, you know, that would be called, you're a latchkey kid, that would be illegal for your parents to leave you home. But yeah, we would get on the bus and go downtown and, you know, meet my mom when she finished at work or something like that, but stop at the comic book store and buy this or that. Now, this project with the toys, the gentleman, Robert Roach, he's part of an African-American kind of creative collective out there in L.A. I've just stumbled on these groups, and I guess that, for lack of a better word, they're calling themselves collectives, but... Mm-hmm. The Antidote Trust, I think they call themselves, but they let me be in their booth at the Comic Con in San Diego, which I didn't know anything about the Comic Con growing up, but, that is a crazy event.
Yeah.
I mean, this project has allowed me to do the Toy Fair in New York City at Jacob Javits, which is crazy. It's allowed me to go to Hong Kong in China, which I wouldn't have had a reason to do otherwise. It's had me go to, like, yeah, the Comic Con in San Diego. I'm trying to think. I got to speak at Harper's Ferry at the 150th anniversary of John Brown's raid. I was on a panel.
Holy crap.
Speaking about trying appropriate ways to expose children to African American history. But so I would encourage, if there's anyone out here, you got a project, I'm sure, just like your project with this podcast. If you've got a project, just pursue it, because sometimes, yes, there's the money side of it, but there's also these things that just open up new conversations and connect you to new people around your interests that are just kind of wild. But the Comic Con, have you ever been out there to that in San Diego?
I have not been to San Diego Comic Con. I've heard so many good things, and that's one of my goals in life is to go out there once.
The people, they dress, I mean, everybody, they don't care what kind of shape they're in, everybody dressing up, the Hornet, you know, the whatever character they like, they've gone out and bought the full-fledged outfit.
I've seen 278-pound Spider-Man in all his glory.
Right, in some tights, right. And you're like, what is going on? And they are just loving it. And it's like alternative universe.
Like, Peter Parker's let himself go a little bit, but he's not going to stop fighting the crime, man. So
that's right.
Great pasta comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like, did you ever get discouraged? Like, do you ever feel let down by people's, like, if there's ever like a lack of enthusiasm, say Comic-Con, you go out to Comic-Con, like, there's just not a ton of black people there, but the ones who are there, are you like, all right, here we go. Yeah, let's go. Come on, brother. Come over to the black toys. Let's talk about it. You know?
Right. Well, so I guess particularly when you find a little niche mm-hmm. that you're focused on, like this, black action figures, right? You know, it's geared towards a certain audience. I think over time, I'd encourage anyone who takes on a project like this to, it rests with you a little bit. It's on you, the creator, to find that way to connect with your audience, just like you're doing with your show, you know, and building out your little niche, your followers. It's on you. So I might have been a little, it might be frustrating at some point, like you go on and bought a table at, you know, X mom convention and, you know, you sell four toys. Mm-hmm. That's frustrating. Same time, you end up at one of these conventions where, like, you know, it was in Howard County, Maryland, between Baltimore and D.C. They had a summit of this mom's group. And one of the moms greeted me when I came through the door. And she was like, oh, hey. And I was like, hey, I'm Sterling. I got Black Action Figures, HIAToys.com. And she said, oh, well, I'm get set up. I'm going to come take a look. She came over, took a look. She said, I love this. And she bought all three. Mm. She said, I'm going in this meeting right now, and I'm going to tell all these moms. And when I come out, be ready. She came out. I sold like $750 worth of action figures in like 20 minutes.
Wow.
And when you experience a moment like that, you're like, well, maybe I did do something right, you know. And then the question is, how do I repeat that?
Right.
How do I do it again? And a lot goes into it. So, on the business side, I've done a lot of reflecting, trying to get it right. But, needless to say, while there's some moments of, you know, you wish it could be better, it's part of the journey. And everything's not always going to work out just the way you want it. But you know, I got some great testimonials, some great people that have bought and purchased and supported me. So, you know, I'm just going to continue on with the journey. You know, thankful even now we got to meet. I'll say I stumbled on you on the internet, just doing a little research. And said you're one of the great podcasts everybody's following. I said, well, how do I get some time? You know, that's when I shot you an email.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, man. I actually remember I also collected comics when I was a kid. Well, I say collected, but I really read them. Right. Read them until they weren't valuable, you know.
Right.
Like a true child.
I read them and put them in a box, or in a milk crate.
Me too. Yeah, I would put mine in crates and boxes.
That's my collection.
Yeah, I'm collecting that, Dad. And my dad, that's an investment. That's not an investment. It's falling apart, but,
That's right.
So, but I remember I got Dwayne McDuffie's, first run of, all of his comics. I think at the time they might have been called like Flatbush Comics. Right. And they were all black and white, like he was just starting out, and I bought them directly from him in Atlanta at a hair show. So you really never know when, where someone's gonna get that spark, like, oh my god, I want this, you know. Like you said, you've gone to Japan, Comic-Con, you know, and it just happens that, hey, small a town in Virginia, boom, you know. So it just hits.
I just want to add that story now. I enjoy this. Talking about a modern day hero, right? Yeah. You just brought one up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Dwayne McDuffie has passed away. I met him at that Comic Con I was at because of Robert Roach and the other guys.
Wow.
But he passed away like last year or year before.
Yeah, 2011, I believe. He was only 49 years old.
Yeah. So some of your listeners out here, please look up Mr. McDuffie and, you know, look into his work. But Mr. Fantastic Four, right? Artist. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and creative director behind some other
Icon, Static, Shock, Hardware. Like, talk about movies that could be made. Like, with the way superhero things are going, like we could get a Static Shock movie. I'd love to see that, man.
Right. Oh, Mr. Robert Roach, his comic book is called Menthu. That's his name. That's one of his lines there.
Menthu.
Yeah, and I think he has another one called The Roach.
All right, I'm gonna check those out, man. Another thing I wanted to ask too, you know, I know we're getting close to wrapping up, but I have a couple more questions. Is your goal to eventually make this like your living, or do you like it as a hobby, a side thing? Because I heard you say you're still a lawyer.
Yeah.
So like, you know, what is the long term goal for this?
I mean, yeah, to me, the action figures are the beginning step to bring some of these stories alive. Now, quietly, if I could find a way to put that money together and me do the John Brown movie, I would love to. John Brown and his Raiders. And with a focus on Dangerfield Newby. Look up Dangerfield Newby.
Yeah, I looked at a picture of him. Yeah, he looks like a real cool character here.
Right? I mean, so telling these stories a little more fuller. I don't know exactly, you know, how far I'll get. I don't have any training as a filmmaker or anything like that, but to me, this is just a start. So I can't say I have the vision, like, you know, like, oh, I've always wanted to be a filmmaker or a storyteller, but it's something that interests me, right? It interests me, like, even if I'm not making money at it, I'm still interested. I'd be reading books about history anyway. So now I'm reading books and doing some stuff and maybe, you know, learning and meeting more people by doing it with this project. So, where does it all end up? I'm not sure. Okay. Ideally, so right now the next phase, get to 10 action figures. Mm-hmm. That would, if you wanted to say, where's my next hurdle? Get to 10 action figures. And I'm not sure even how that can happen yet. I have to build a broader base of support with moms, educators, and young people. And we'll see. And then, you know, who knows? The more success you get, the more maybe investors will trust you to do a little bit more and creep down that road a little more towards telling the stories in more innovative ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's got to be something with the online aspect of things or apps to find some fun and creative way to bring history to kids, because, you know, that's just a medium that kids are using now so much, even at a younger age.
Like, who's your inspirations, like, to even get, you know, started, or is there any, like, business inspirations that you
have? I'm from Philadelphia, mm-hmm. but I'm from a single parent household, West Philadelphia. I was a kind of a nerdy kid. I'm a little bit older than you, but there was this movie with Timothy Hutton called Taps. Mm-hmm. And it took place at Valley Forge Military Academy, which is right outside of Philadelphia. I was young. I don't know even why I was able to see the movie, but I saw it. I was, you know, maybe there was no violence in it, nothing too crazy. But I just remember, ooh, boarding school, military academy. You know, these guys are real impressive. And I said to my mom, like, it's third grade, I want to go to Valley Forge Military Academy. And I went away to, like, some relative's house for the summer. I came back, and she said, well, what about this? The Milton Hershey School in Hershey, Pennsylvania. It's a boarding school started by the chocolate guy, Milton Hershey. Mm. And so it's a free boarding school in Hershey, Pennsylvania, that the inspiration is because when the man died, he left the company to the school. He didn't leave the school to the company.
Wow.
So the school is worth like $8 billion in endowment. Wow. Now, so as a fourth grader, fifth grader, I read, right? I was a little bit of a nerdy kid. In fifth grade, I read the biography of Milton Hershey, mm-hmm. right? And how he came up with the, you know, the Hershey's chocolate and all that. And he failed 7 times. He had to keep borrowing money for stuff. And his first real big hit of a business was caramel, not even chocolate. But he sold that business in like the 1870s, early 1880s for like $1 million cash, because he already had his chocolate idea lined up. So that's one of my real inspirations about what business is about. I mean, I still don't know, you know, got a super handle on business. I've got, you know, I've done pieces, but nowhere near the success he had reached. So that's a motivation.
Okay, man. Is there a lot of women in the industry, man? Is this like a chick magnet?
What are you talking about?
Making these toys, man. I feel like a lot of moms gotta be like, hey, this dude makes he's a positive brother, make toys for the community.
Kids.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it a chick magnet. Okay. I wouldn't call it.
All right.
Wait, you appreciate that. I was at one of them little places vending some toys, and somebody joked, he's a 40-year-old virgin because he collected action figures or something. I hadn't even seen the movie at the time.
Oh, that's cold, man.
They were like, the black 40-year-old virgin. I'm not the 40-year-old virgin, but
like, I'm trying to help the community, right. And y'all got jokes.
And she was laughing at that the whole time. I don't know what she was on, weaves or something. I don't know, but
oh man,
we checking on me.
Yeah, we could be cold, bro. We could be cold.
So I was like, all I could do is laugh. She was like, look at this dude selling action figures.
Well, that's cool, man. Now, how if people want to, like, you know, order action figures, you know, if they've heard the show and they're like, hey, I got a child, I'd like to get them some education. Like, can they go to HIAtoys.com and order directly from the site?
Yes, they can order from the site, and I'll be shipping them up and sending them out from Washington, D.C. So anybody out there who does, we really appreciate you supporting our effort there and telling others about the project we've undertaken.
All right, man. It's Black History Month, y'all. I know a lot of y'all got kids. I see, you know, when y'all listen, y'all have to turn the show down. Here's something that you guys can do that can, support a black business as well, but, you know, also educate your children. Each toy comes with a lesson plan. So you can, you know, you, like, even if you don't know who they are, you can just get your little quick read through, fake it till you make it, and your kid thinks you smart now. Oh, daddy know everything about Benjamin Banneker. He don't
Dad,
know.
Come on.
Yeah. You know who that is, boy? You know, you get to pull that move. So, you know, I suggest you do it. And obviously, man, I appreciate, you coming through, Sterling. You know, I think we had a fun talk, man. I think people are gonna enjoy listening to this. And I feel like everybody's gonna come away a little bit more, educated.
No. Thank you for the opportunity to be on your show and have just an enjoyable conversation about Black history and its importance to us now and, you know, 2014.
No doubt, man. We made it like almost an hour and I haven't even cursed once. So it's like a record for me. Everybody go to facebook.com/blackactionheroes. Like the site I just did. You know, like I said, go to HIA Toys. And you can follow him on Twitter at S Ashby. We'll do that. We'll be back again, you know, soon for another Medium Talk episode. And, you guys have a good day out there in podcast land. Peace out.